dodges. I ride in this wind on my good horse. I call you my shiny black bears to the playhouse of fortune to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else.
You're tuned to WEOS Geneva, WXXE Fenner Syracuse, W201CD Ithaca Community Radio, Free Radio Santa Cruz, or KFAR Knoxville. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Lynn Gary. This week, we continue the international inquiry into the unanswered questions of 9/11, a conference that took place at the end of March in San Francisco. One of the most important efforts to get to the truth about the role of the administration regarding 9/11 is a RICO lawsuit that's been filed by Ellen Mariani, a widow of one of the passengers of the hijacked planes. Ms. Mariani and her lawyer, Phil Berg, spoke in New York City this weekend and appeared all too briefly on last Friday's Democracy Now! So tonight I'm going to broadcast their presentation from the inquiry, and we'll follow that with a brief look at the government's attacks on basic freedoms with Riva Entin of the National Lawyers Guild, and then the audio of a documentary on 11 unanswered questions about 9/11. And as I announced at the end of last week's show, the second phase of the international inquiry into the unanswered questions of 9/11 will take place this coming week in Toronto. It will include many of the speakers from the San Francisco event, as well as additional speakers. For more info on how to attend, visit on the web www.911inquiry.org. So we'll begin with Ellen Mariani, who will, among other things, speak in depth about her husband Neil that she lost. How special he was. Indeed, each person killed, whether in the 9/11 attacks, or under U.S. bombs in other countries, or in the U.S. military, are precious and irreplaceable to somebody.
You know, I think we all have certain images indelibly etched into our consciousness relating to the events of 9/11. And one of those, for me, was the on-camera image of Todd Beamer's wife, Lisa, standing there, singled out by President Bush during that post-9/11 address. She seemed to be wearing something of a forced smile. I could just feel her pain and wondered how comfortable she really was with taking part in the presentation. Of course, it's really hard for any of us to know about the level of heartbreak and trauma unless we've had the misfortune to experience it firsthand for ourselves. Well, Ellen Mariani has been through it all. But after a period of adjustment to such incredible loss of her husband, Neil, she resolved not to acquiesce into just letting it go. Instead, she spearheaded a campaign to see to it that the perpetrators of this crime are brought to justice, and the names include Bush and a sordid lot of his henchmen. Under the RICO Act, and the assist of attorney Phil Berg, Ellen is pressing for prosecution of those named guilty parties for prior knowledge, failure to act and prevent or warn of the events of 9/11. Over this weekend, no name have I heard mentioned more often, cited for her courage, her stamina, and her conviction to see this through. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Ellen Mariani.
Thank you. I wished he was here. I wish they all were here. They said, if I'm nervous, to picture you all in your underwear. I can't do it. I can't do that. Actually, I can't see you. That was my husband of 13 years. He was a neat guy. He was not my first husband. I had a terrible marriage, never to get married again, ever. There's a cute little love story that goes with that. I'd already left the area of Massachusetts and gone to California, Southern California. When I took the children back to see their dad, a friend said, I have a person I'd like you to meet. He's a neat guy. And I went, oh yeah, I've heard this before. So I hung up on him. I says, he's playing a trick. Anyway, I almost went back to California without meeting this person. The minute I saw him, I went, oh my God. What do I do now? I got up and used the phone a couple times. We're in a little coffee shop. No, I'm not going back to New England. But guess what? That's where I ended up. And we had a beautiful marriage. Perfect, what I've always looked for a soulmate. And on September 11th, we're going to my daughter's wedding. We left early in the morning. We saw the sun come up, not knowing it was going to be his last sunrise, or mine. Didn't know that I was going to be, within 2.5 to 3 hours, a widow. I have to read something to you. It's a poem that my new son-in-law had written just the other day for his school in college. And I saw it, and I said, can I read it today? And he said, okay. I put my glasses on. And it says, why a hero? Why would a man who died on a plane or behind a desk with nothing to gain? Why should she, a mom, a sister, a friend, be exalted among us for meeting her end? Why should a child on its last ride, who suffered in innocence, who gruesomely died? Why are they heroes? What have they done? They died without fighting, yet our hearts they have won. They do give us hope for what they built, memories of love completely without guilt. Our hearts go forward, driven by the past, just as they did, even until our last. I want to show you some pictures that I thought you might enjoy. If I could have the next one, please. That is Neil. He was very kind. He wouldn't hurt anybody at all. I would if they did something wrong. We balanced, right? You notice today I've got these on, the pearls, Mrs. Bush. I was told, I was on a radio show, if you say anything about her sons, you're dead. I said to the host, back up. What did you just say to me? And he repeated it. And I says, I'll go one further. How about Jeb Bush? What did he do? Didn't anybody teach her son, the president, to meet those armed force bodies as they come back from fighting in coffins? He does not meet them at the airport. That is very disrespectful. They are protecting our country, even though it's lies. Next one. This is where we were going together on September 11th, to my daughter's wedding. If you notice what's in the background, where the flag is, what I went through for the next 10 hours was hell. It was hell. We'll tell you. I was on American Transair. My husband, who the last minute I coaxed him to go, we really didn't have the funds. So I went up into my attic and I went, I can use this for my yard sale, and I just went right through. We had a beautiful yard sale. Now I says, now you can go. I've got to live with that. I arrive at the airport, him and I, at about 4:15. We had already made arrangements to park the car for a week. Couldn't find the place to go. They had barricaded everything. Believe it or not, we drove around 3 times. This is in Boston, the Logan Airport. Not a soul at 4:15 in the morning. No one. If there were terrorists, they had a good chance, didn't they? I got out of the car. He had it still running. And yelled, is anybody around? Because I could not find the parking area for us or my airline terminal, American Transair. He was going on United. A man came out in a jumpsuit and said, it's down there, and pointed down further. And he disappeared. Who was he? I don't know. He came in to help me lug some boxes. So I wouldn't have to lug. Perfect gentleman, perfect man for any woman to take home to their mom. I didn't have a mom, of course. I'm much older, and my mom died when I was 2. So I really started my training early to be very strong, being brought up by grandparents. He came back, and he kissed me 2 or 3 times, and he said, I'll see you. My plane comes in 3 minutes after yours. And he was gone. Can we have the next one? My way of healing was putting a little altar of Neil in a spare bedroom in my home. So I would go out with somewhat of a smile in the public, because people want to forget this now. In the past, we don't want to think of this. If you see, you are going to see the plaque. There's nothing of Neil. There's no place to put this plaque. So I kept it in a spare bedroom in my home in Derry, New Hampshire. Can't believe it, that he's gone on flight 175. Next one. This one is the death certificate. There's something very interesting about this one. It says, he died, blunt trauma, body not found. Also, it says, passenger on airplane, United Airlines Flight 175 intentionally crashed into the World Trade Center. I don't see anything about terrorists on here. Next one. Here we are. Neil spent, my husband, 4 years in the Air Force. We had a memorial in front of my home. 3 of my daughters and 1 of my sons, my only son. You can see that flag will not be flown until justice for me and the rest of the 3,000 will be served in the courts in New York. Next one. Does anybody know what that is? That is only 1/3 of the precious people that were murdered that day. There are quilts. They were in a Boston auditorium for everybody to see. It was eerie. You wished they could just crash through and say, I'm okay, but they don't. Everybody all over the world made one of those squares for one of the victims, in honor of the families. And I want to thank anybody in this audience or anybody you know for doing this. This is special and precious. The next one. This is my goodbye letter to Neil. 3 kisses and goodbye. Before I read that, I don't think you can read it from there. 3 hours at my airport after I was told by a Chicago news reporter when I asked him to go find out what was going on. He came back and he told me, your husband's plane crashed. I remember turning my face away from him and grabbing my ears because I went deaf for a minute. I don't know how long I was there, but I know there was a lot of people still there. I turned around to say something to him, and he was gone. Everybody was gone. It was like a twilight zone for me. And I kept pep-talking myself, it's going to be okay. Whatever it is, I can fix it, right? No, I can't. I didn't ask where, I just figured he's gone. When I feel better and can comprehend, I will ask further. I had a hand on my right shoulder, said, please come with me. I looked, and she was an American Trans Air trauma specialist. That is where the Chicago news reporter had gone to get help. I spent 3 hours in my terminal trying to call United Airlines. They wouldn't pick up. They wouldn't answer. I didn't want to look or talk, but I noticed the faces were very different. People were not, they were looking down. After 3 hours, I was tipped off that the hub isn't very far away from Midway. Let's go. So I went. They weren't very nice to me. They were very nasty to me. They took me to a red room and locked the door with my trauma lady, and she said, you can leave now. And I said, she's not going to leave me because I asked her not to. Next 7 hours, I sat there. Beautiful. Tears rolling down her eyes. I'm saying, what is she crying for? She knew I didn't know what happened. I did not know where that plane had crashed. She did say to me, would you like to watch TV? I said, oh, no. I got to use a pen and pencil and figure out what I'm going to do. He was my breadwinner. He was my best friend. So we went 7 hours sitting there. We had to ask for food. I'm not here to bash an airline. I'm telling you what happened. But I happened to turn around, and they were dirty looking at me, and I'm thinking, what did I have done? Finally, they took us out of this locked room and put us in a training room where there was a lot of phones. Ah, now I can go to the ladies' room without asking to unlock the doors. 8:20 at night, Mrs. Mariani, pick up the phone. I pick up the phone. It says, a woman, Louis Neil Mariani, was on plane 175. Boom. Nothing else. Nothing. No sorry. Nothing. My other daughter, the newlywed-to-be, made arrangements for me to go into a church family's home. I didn't talk on that ride. I didn't know where I was going. I didn't ask any questions. I had time to do that tomorrow. I didn't sleep all night, of course. Bad dream? No, it was real. But when I did get up a couple times, I wrote, when my memory was there, get an attorney. I got the attorney. He called United Airlines the next day because my husband had a lot of cash on him from the yard sale. Everything was gone. Him, everything. What am I going to do? So when I got back the next week, we did go through with the wedding. Everybody was there. Your media was there. I was in shock. I tried to keep the girls lifted up, dying inside, but I did it. That's what I was taught to do. I was taught to help others. I took care of the mentally handicapped in my home. I took care of veterans in my home. I took in unwed mothers, babies right from hospitals. We're taught from little, you help others. You do not feel sorry for yourself. That did help a lot. But my grandmother always said, if you fall, brush yourself off and continue. I had to been brought up by my grandparents because my mom died when I was 2. So I had a little training there. I didn't realize. She was a very wise woman.
The next day, I asked, where was his plane that crashed? What happened? She turned the TV on. I couldn't believe it. Can you imagine what I would have done to United's terminal? If they'd let me see this the day before, I would have gone right up in their face and said, you're glaring at me? Because later, so for the next 4 days, I'm stuck there. I had no family, no loved ones, me. Every day I would call, when is the plane going out? Mrs. Mariani, you do not call us, we will call you. Yes. Fourth day, that's the day of the sit-down wedding dinner at night on a Friday. They're getting married on the 15th. I said, well, I guess I have to take this in my own hands. I got up at 4 o'clock and I said to the lady, would you like to accompany me to California? I'd love to. Get dressed, get packed, we're going. This is the same determination what I have done in this lawsuit. I have to take it in my own hands. Now I'll speed it up. I call United at 7 o'clock. I says, this is Mrs. Mariani, we will tell you when you leave. No, I'm going to tell you. My tears are on a shelf. You are murderers. I'm your boss right now. I said, I forgot to tell you, I already had the news media in the house. Forgot to tell you that. I said, I give you 10 minutes. I want 2 first-class tickets to LAX immediately. If you don't, I'm calling the media. They were already there. And I hung up. I said, good day. Hung right up. 10 minutes later, if you can get there, fine. We pack them into the back of the van and off we go. Of course, we know we're getting there because we're all ready. When we get there, oh, they're all smiles. The media is there from whomever they want to look good for them. Out pops our news media. And he said, Ellen, don't forget. Take off your little speaker that's on your belt. I forgot. Their microphone. Because he was interviewing me in the van. And I forgot to take it off, to hand it to him. And they're standing back smirking. I'm thinking, what are they laughing at? So I go through the little security thing and it went nuts. Whoops. And I hand it to them. Now they're really mad. Give me your purse. I said, you will get my purse, all right. And I turned it right upside down. I said, you'll get it over your head because now I've had enough. What they did to me, they radioed ahead to LAX. I get to LAX. The people, the employees, your flight attendants on United were wonderful. They were very, very, this is corporate doing this. When I get there with this lady that I had been staying with, she accompanied us to the left and down metal stairways. I'm going, you look to the left or the right, you're on your head because it's very steep. I'm thinking, what is she doing this for? And she goes, we're doing this so the media won't be in your face. I said, wrong to myself, just wait a few more minutes, because I caught on to them. She plugs us, she takes us to the back and into a dirty old dish room hall, smell the garbage, everything, plunked us in a training room. I'm watching my husband's plane in both sections, both corners, crash. We get that turned off. All of a sudden, she comes in to my woman that I've been at. You stay here. You come with me. Your family's outside. I go outside, and I says, well, where are they? I'm thinking they're in the hall or something. They're outside. I look, and is it the Maud family that stands like this? Here was, which I knew about, 48 hours, who was waiting to interview me. He had been stranded, and he lives in New Jersey. So he decided to follow my daughter for the wedding. I didn't know why they were so angry till I got out there. What she had said was, you, 48 hours, take your cameras and get out of here. Well, they didn't. And you, children, that's what they had been treating me like, a child or an old woman. Come in here if you want your mother. And my son-in-law says, you bring her out here now. And that is my introduction until I get back to Boston after the wedding. The cameras are there again. I didn't know this one. I wasn't prepared for this. All I knew was when I come out of the airplane, there were twos of groups of people on each side. No one else in the whole terminal section when we come off the plane. And I'm thinking, these look weird. They look like posters or something. They didn't look real. And I caught them looking up at me, and they looked down, pretend they were talking. Then all of a sudden I heard footsteps behind me. What is this? I turn around. They had surrounded me. Protection? I don't know what they were doing. They didn't explain anything to me. I'm a leader. I'm not a follower. And I thought, oh, want to play with me? I'm going to play a game with you. So I get to the end. I see 200 people blocked. I see a piece of paper come up, and it said, Derry, New Hampshire. I knew there was going to be a reporter wanting to talk to me. So I wait. I almost get almost around the corner, and I thought, watch this. I'm thinking this to myself. This is a good way to keep my mind occupied. I did a quick left, and I said, that is my friend. And they're all standing. I caught them all standing there like, look stupid. And they pull him out of the group. They see he's got a camera. They take it away from him. Okay? And he almost lost his job because of that. So then we now proceed by van to the Marriott because you could not stay in at that time in the airport. Get over there, and I see faces again like they've been fighting. The Marriott was full of United Airlines employees, top officials from Chicago. They'd been fighting with a woman, camera woman from Channel, I believe it was Channel 7. I'm thinking, what are they, nuts? I had this humongous man come over to me like he was going to, you know, comfort me. And he took his fingers, dug right into my bone, and he said, get the media out of here now. Have I been through anything? That's a challenge to me. This is why I'm here today. I was taught, taking care of the mentally handicapped, how to defend myself. Here I got a mental person attacking me. And I looked him right in the eyes. That's what you're supposed to do. I looked right into his soul, and I said, you or no one is going to tell me who I can and cannot talk to. Do you understand? Do you understand? And I repeated it. He's looking at me, and he's backing away. I said, come back here. I want your name. I'm not giving you my name. I thought, okay, I'll find it out. 3 weeks later, I had to call because there was one nice one in the group, and I happened to have gotten his card from my girlfriend who was there. So I called the nice one, and I said, I just want to thank you for being nice. And the other one, oh, you mean so-and-so and so-and-so? Gave me everything I wanted. Okay? Now I want to quickly, because before they come up with something else, the reason you're probably thinking, why did Neil go on a second plane? I had my ticket 2 or 3 months before. And that yard sale provided money. And he, the last minute, went to the computer. And he says, you sure I should go? And I'm all positive. And he's more laid back and a little nervous about bills and things. I says, for crying out loud, you've got to be positive. You're making me nervous. So I go to the kitchen and I do dishes. Because he's like, are you sure I should do this? So he comes out laughing. What is so funny? He says, how much did your ticket cost? Senior discount, it was 200 and something. His was less. Going on the computer, nonstop. I said, you stinker. Ellen, he said, a perfect gentleman, he said, because I have carpal tunnel, I should be taking your ticket and taking the boxes on my plane. And I said, no, it's too late. They won't do that anyway. And you know what happened? We were going, after my daughter's wedding, to a second honeymoon, up the coast to here. All his good clothes, brand new camcorder, all the money, and of course my husband is gone. That little note where I said visit, get an attorney, I visited him 17 days later in Boston. He is a member, which I didn't know anything about, of the trial lawyer's care. Didn't know it. And he, my girlfriend and her husband had recommended him. Mrs. Mariani, hot off the press, I've got everything about the victim's fund. How can you get that in 17 days? Didn't it take Kenneth Feinberg to December 21st? How did this all be in order? I don't know. Was it planned? So he's telling me, you know, we don't want to sue, that we have government money, da-da-da-da-da-da. And he says, do you understand? He's talking down to me, and I'm thinking, you people are going to get it before you're through. I'm grieving. So, yeah, I do understand. And he said, what do you understand? I said, what happens if I want to sue? Oh, you don't want to do that. You're going to be in New York. The jury could, you know, you never know what a jury's going to do. And no one's there, you know. And you just don't want to do it. I says, okay, thank you very much. And I got outside and I said, where'd you get that shirt? Now I find out Kenneth Feinberg is going to come out with this complicated, special master he is, plan. Well, how could he be coming up with it when 17 days after it happened, they already knew the plan? Okay? But I did a little background, and if anybody has a good computer, do a background on Kenneth Feinberg, the special master. First of all, he is not my special master. God is. 5 minutes. Thank you. I put a lawsuit in purposely December 20th. He comes out the next day. How dare that woman do this? Da, da, da. Kenneth Feinberg has had it in for me ever since because people followed me. Never mind if they lost somebody who wants to find out the truth. He got in with my attorney, number one, Don Nolan. And through a little here and there, I'm finding out because Don Nolan, when I hired him, grieving very badly, we had heard anybody that takes advantage of a victim's fund, has anybody heard that? You will be prosecuted. So I relaxed. I signed a contract with Don Nolan out of Chicago. I don't want to sound like a bitch, but I said, you cross me and you are, and you will see one. Okay? He did. He got in with Kenneth Feinberg and conspired with Kenneth Feinberg, special master. Flag goes up because he wants to meet with me, and that's when Don said, Ellen, I got this letter from special master. I meet him in person for the first time. He acts like Donald Trump. He stayed away, and then you go into this big office, and we're having lunch. And I said, I want to see this letter. No, you can't see the letter. And he pretended he couldn't find it. I said, I have to clean it up. I said, when you do find it, tell him to wipe his fanny with it. He didn't like that, but he got nervous and he got scared. Now the flags are really up. I start looking at my paperwork. Because he had said to me, Ellen, I want you to do me a favor. Don Nolan said, what is that, Ellen? I mean, Don. And he says, I want you to go to a doctor. I took care of the mentally handicapped. I went, oh, this is going to be fun. What kind of a doctor? He said, I want you to go to, why do you want me to go to a doctor? And he says, what's going to help your case? Really? What kind? I knew what was coming. A psychiatrist. And I said, a psychiatrist. You want me to go to a doctor, help my case? And it's a psychiatrist. I said, guess what, Don? You go to the doctor. Yeah. and then you go to hell. I did. Now I really had red flags up, and I started looking at my paperwork. Guess what number one attorney had done? Made himself power of attorney over me. I have 4 grown children. That's okay, because I wanted that letter, so I wasn't going any further. I wanted Kenneth Feinberg's letter, so I had to be very sweet and wait patiently. That letter is all over the world today because I got it. That's one of the exhibits. And I did an interview in New York, and I guess one of the reporters called and said, I called Kenneth Feinberg, and he said, do you know you're on a lawsuit? In a lawsuit, Ellen Mariani, what lawsuit? He goes, Ellen Mariani's racketeering and corruption lawsuit. Yeah. Actually, you have a letter in there. What letter? I didn't write any letters. He said it twice to the guy, and the guy had called in the radio station. I don't like, do not laugh. You see, they always get caught. My grandmother says, we have one mouth, 2 eyes, 2 ears. Walk softly, carry a big stick, and you will get them. You will get them. Red Cross, I don't know if you know, I didn't receive all of your money. None of us did. They're in with the government. George Mitchell was first on the board. After a year, Tom Ridge is on the board. They gave us a little bit after I complained to Chicago, and they put it in the paper, and this news reporter who had told me my husband's plane had crashed got a call from the Red Cross and said, tell Mrs. Mariani we'll get her money out to her right now. I got $6,000. Then it was spaced. Then we're hungry. We're worried. We don't know what to do. In comes Salvation Army to help us, the Safe Horizon to help us, United Way to help us. Then we get a form saying fill out all the paperwork, which welfare people do. Everything personal. They know my husband's gone. They know they're all gone. They're using us now for what? Thank you. For the lawsuit. Lawsuits. And for the insurance companies. Okay? Well, then all of a sudden, we get a call. We need your W-2 forms of year 2000, not 2001, and 2002. I asked my counsel that was assigned to me. Why? I don't know. I said, well, give me your superior. She didn't know either. I went up 4 levels. I get the deputy to the president of the Red Cross. We're best friends. I bet we're not now. Because I said, this is tit for tat. You want my privacy? I want yours. Where'd all the money go? Yeah. Would you like to know where millions went? I have the accounts. To all the people that cleaned up Ground Zero's food. FEMA was supposed to do that. That's where your money went. The minute you let that money go, it's no longer yours. They will tell you where it's going to be on this end. Have I given them my W-2 form? No, I'm not. They even sent me a registered letter. I call up my person in charge of me, and I says, after the lawsuit's over, I will decide whether I'm going to give it to you or not. I don't understand. I says, yes, you do understand. Stop playing stupid. Okay? Mr. Feinberg still has it in for me. Can we have the, before I read the goodbye letter, I'll read the goodbye letter first. I'm going to try. 3 kisses and goodbye. I, as your wife, have searched for sane answers to what happened on that beautiful, sunny, warm Tuesday, September 11th. You, Neil, were so tanned and fit, happy to be leaving with me before dawn from Boston Logan Airport. You and I were traveling on separate planes to California wedding of my daughter, Gina, your stepdaughter. You decided to go out for the wedding at the very last minute, and to help pay for the tickets, we held garage sales. Neil, I will never forget when we said goodbye at the Boston Logan Airport. You kissed me at the curb and said, "Goodbye, Ellen." Then you kissed me again inside and said, "See you, Ellen." Now, he's not one of these people to kiss in public. "I'll arrive 3 minutes after your plane lands." And he walked away. Oh, then a sudden he came in like a little boy, and he gave me a third kiss and a big hug, and he was perspiring. And I'm thinking, he hadn't gone on a plane since we were courting in 1987. And I thought he was perspiring because he was scared. He didn't like flying. I looked back to get a last glimpse of you, and he was gone. Neil, you never made it to California for Gina's wedding, that September 15th, 2001. I left 2 hours before you and had a scheduled layover in Chicago. It was there that I found out what had happened to you. Your plane, United Flight 175, had crashed into the Second World Trade Center. You, as my husband, were gone in a ball of fire. The September 15th wedding of Gina's went on in defiance of what had happened on September 11th. Now, as I stood as a new widow of 4 days, Gina asked me to give her away to be married. I wore 2 yellow roses and made a toast in your remembrance of you. Neil, my life as a widow is now still and very eerie. I cannot hear your voice or see your handsome face. Many reminders make it hard, like the birthdays 2 days before Christmas. Also, I will remember July 30th, which would have been our 14th wedding anniversary. There's nothing left to you, no resting place or a grave site to visit, just an empty hole in my heart and the heartache without you. I realize the sun has shone once again as it did on September 11th, 2001. When we parted for the last time, you as my husband, but isn't the same anymore. I have wanted to be with you so many times since that day and had wished I was with you on that plane, giving each other comfort like we had done so many years, times throughout our marriage. This was not to be in the plans for us. Now it is my job to go on without you. I will always have the memories that we shared together, and I thank God for you being my husband for 13 years. Now I walk alone, not really without you. For death did we part. My hope and prayer to God is that we all find peace, comfort, and support one another as we go on living without our loved ones. Peace and God bless us all. Ellen M. Mariani. May I have the next one, please? You can see Neil Mariani. I couldn't believe what had happened. I just stood there, and may I have the next one? Here are some questions. We'll give you a second to read it. These are the questions that I want to ask Mr. Bush. If you can read it fairly quickly. It's too dark? Okay. It is still my personal belief that you intentionally allowed September 11, 2001 to happen. You gathered public support for a war on terrorism. I find it distasteful for you to use our disaster of death and destruction for your political gain. These troops have suffered and died and will continue to die for your lies of these so-called weapons of mass destruction that have never been found. Our American dreams of freedom have been shattered for the future generations to come. Thank you.
911 widow and plaintiff, Ellen Mariani.
God bless you, Ellen. We're all proud of you, and we're all with you. Our next speaker, Ellen's attorney, Phil Berg, has graciously allowed Ellen to go a little bit into his time period. Phil Berg has made his presence felt among us as well. He stood up in front of in the front row just the other night during Michael Rupert's presentation to shed light on these associated discoveries of complicity. Within the sitting administration, and now we have the privilege of hearing more of the story, all about what's involved when you have a mission to hold the highest office of the land accountable for crimes against the people of America and humanity. Phil is the former Deputy Attorney General of Pennsylvania. His website is forthetruth.com. Help me welcome, please, Attorney Phil Berg.
Evelyn's right. I was sitting back there when she started speaking. I really can't see you. So, first off, one little correction. So, it's www.911forthetruth, F-O-R, 911forthetruth.com. And that's a great point to speak on here because, first off, I'm very honored to be able to represent Ellen Mariani. I'm representing her on behalf of herself to seeking the truth for her late husband and for the other 3,000 people who were murdered on that day, and also all of you and everyone across the United States and around the world, because what occurred on that day was terrorism. We have to figure out who did it, why it happened, and make sure it never happens again. Short and sweet, in my opinion, is that the one responsible for this, the buck stops there at the president, and George W. Bush must be held accountable for the events of 9/11. The aim of terrorism is to terrorize, and that's what they accomplished on 9/11. 9/11 has changed the history of the world, but we have to figure out why. And it's very serious. Now, let's look back for a minute. Let me give you a little background. When many people ask me, Phil, when did you feel something was wrong on 9/11? Because I have a computer, and next to my computer I have a TV, which is on 24/7, and I'm always watching, switching back and forth to the news channels. And, you know, it caught my attention, as it did all of yours, that a plane accidentally hit the World Trade Center. And at 9:03, two of my secretaries had walked in, and they said, you know, what are you doing here? And a few minutes before that, and we watched as the second plane came around and went into the World Trade Center. And that's the plane that Ellen's husband was on. And then a few minutes later, they switched to Florida. And you saw Andrew Card, the chief of staff, lean over to the president and whisper into his ear and say something, which they told us later. But at that moment in time, I knew something was wrong. Because, first off, we all know that George Bush is not smart. He really, okay, but when we saw absolutely no reaction from the President of the United States when it was later told to us that he was told the second plane hit the World Trade Center and our country was under attack, no reaction meant to me that moment. I never knew I'd be here standing in front of you or having the honor of representing Ellen. At that moment in time, I said something's wrong, because if we were here and we could hear something drop in the next room or the screeching of brakes outside, we would all turn and look or do something. But here the president was told that the country was under attack. And not only that, at that moment in time at 9:03 a.m. on 9/11, two planes had crashed, but another plane was also off course. Now, at that moment in time, the president took control, didn't he? He continued to read a goat story to 30 students, the leader of our country. The other thing that bothered me at that point, and I'm going to have to talk faster because I gave Ellen more time, was I always thought that the president didn't control his movement, and he doesn't. The president and vice president are controlled by the Secret Service, unless told otherwise. And it always bothered me why, what happened at that moment. And later, as I've gotten involved in this case, I received some documentation that Dick Cheney, who is probably more the brains behind what happened that day, But Cheney was supposedly lifted up by the Secret Service out of his office in the White House complex, which is several buildings there, taken to an underground tunnel and out of the building, which makes sense. But how come the president, who was at a photo op in Florida, every student in that room was in danger, everyone was in danger in that building because they knew who the president was, unless, of course, he was involved. And there's no question in my mind, and the goal has to be now to bring the facts forward. George W. Bush, the Bush administration, was involved in the events of 9/11, and they must be held accountable. Now, I know they're hearing that within moments of my saying it, because someone in this room is taping it and has a direct line to the White House and to the Republican National Committee. And if you don't think so, you're wrong. Okay? So pass the message on to George and Dick Cheney that we're going to get you. Okay? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's not. Don't thank Phil Berg. We have to thank all of us. Now, here's something very important. Jim Morris spoke before Ellen, and Jim said, when we come out of here, we have to be all directed. Now, I know this afternoon, please stay around because people want your input. They want to know where we go from here. It is so exciting that this conference was put together by Carol Burlett, and all of you are here. It really is. She deserves a round of applause. And stage two will be of the international inquiry will be in Toronto, and I believe stage three is planned for Europe. The importance now is, and I'm not trying to be selfish, we have a website, the www.911forthetruth.com. I would like all of you to promise to me you will check out our website and do something, two things on that website. One is read the petition that we have on that website. And the petition says, to President of the United States and members of Congress, 9/11 for the truth of Mariani versus Bush. On September 11, 2001, 9/11, the United States of America was attacked, resulting in an international war on terror declared by President George W. Bush without the approval of the United States Congress. I believe and support the legal action brought by Ellen Mariani against defendant George W. Bush et al., and demand the truth regarding the 9/11 attacks. I support Ellen Mariani's federal cause of action. Please go to the website, sign it. Now, there's copies out back if you don't have it. If you can sign, and if you want, you can sign one today if we get the list back. Or take them with you, sign it, and send it back to us. The address is on here. But the importance is we have about 7,000 signatures on that petition at this point. That's great. But you know what? We should have 70,000. We should have 7 million. But see, a lot of people, let me explain one thing that happened. I'm going to talk faster because I got to get everything in about 10 more minutes. I took it over. I was at a friend's house, and I said, here's the petition, brought it up on the computer. I said, can you sign this petition? The person said, yes, I'm with you, but no, I won't sign it. I said, why not? They said, I'm afraid the government is watching your site and checking my name, and I don't want to be in trouble. And I said, do you realize what you just said? If you're afraid of your government? So the petition is pretty straightforward. Sign it, send it to everyone on your email addresses. It won't cost you a penny. Send it on and spread it. Do you know if we took 30 to the fourth power, 30 times 30 times 30 times 30, it would go up to 810,000? So the 7,000 signatures are great, but help us. That's a way to get the message out. We have to, you know, we're very thankful for one thing, the internet, even though we're not sure who founded the internet. But for the internet, we probably wouldn't be here today. We have a vehicle that we can spread the message and everything else. Also on our website, because we need money for this lawsuit and for depositions and things, we ask for $9.11 for the truth. It's on there. I know you have other commitments. Take a look at it if you can. Spread that to other people. Also on our website, we ask for a peaceful revolution. We're asking you to go down there, call your family, call your friends, email them, call your politicians, call the Congress. Congress is a disgrace. Congress right now should be investigating this. You know what should be going right now? The United States Congress should have already started impeachment proceedings against George W. Bush. They spent $50 million for Bill Clinton to find out if he had consensual sex, and they did impeachment proceedings because he said he lied about sex, which probably 99% of the people in the world will lie about sex. And they've spent $30 million on the shuttle investigation, and I think about $11 million on this with a cutoff date. It's a disgrace what they've done. Let me move on this. So check our site. Also call the newspapers. Call your talk shows. Ellen and I will speak or go on any radio or TV talk show around the world. We've done some. We're doing BBC this afternoon, I understand, at 2 o'clock. We will get the message out. What is RICO? RICO is Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organization Act. It was created by the United States Congress in the 1960s to go after the mafia, to go after the mob. Well, ladies and gentlemen, there's a mob in the White House, and we're going to get them. How does RICO work? RICO, you need a pattern. You need before, during, and after. Before, there's all kinds of complicity that the Bush and Cheney gang did. We can go back in history, way back. We don't have to go that far back. But with the Afghanistan, with the oil pipeline, with the drugs, everything, with the plan, we've heard from Treasury Secretary O'Neill, we've heard from Dick Clark. They had planned Iraq, but they needed a second Pearl Harbor, and they did it, and they got it on 9/11. Unfortunately, they had to murder 3,000 people, and we're going to hold them accountable. So they need, for 9/11, you need before, during, and after. They had foreknowledge, no question about it. I don't care what you want to say. They failed to warn, they failed to prevent, and since then, they've been covering up. We got RICO. They got rid of the mayor of Providence, Rhode Island, a year or two ago on a RICO. It's been done before. It can be done. We're going to be stymied. They're going to throw every block up they can. Right now, we're doing some procedural things in court. So continue to watch our site. In 2 or 3 weeks, you'll see some major developments, which I can't talk about right near today. That's including the White House. You'll have to wait a few weeks. Hey, wait, you know what? We'll give you a round of applause. Do you have guts enough to stand up to a person from the White House or Republican administration? I don't think you do. Okay. The biggest problem we have is, see, the American public doesn't want to believe that their government would do something like this. And our goal is to help do that. Now, the newspaper article yesterday had a lot of good points about this conference. However, the headline was, the conspiratory theories are out there. Now, many of the, quote, conspiratory theories will probably, down the pike, turn out to be the truth. But for your friends and neighbors, for the general public, and our lawsuit goes right down the middle, the unanswered questions which have been put forth throughout this conference, they must be answered. Like, I will not go into, and Ellen and I cannot deal with the issue of the World Trade Center North and South Tower collapse. There's real issues about that. But what you have to look at and tell your family and friends and neighbors is, look at Building 7. You know, and I know a lot of this, I'm being redundant, but Building 7's in the World Trade Center complex. A 47-story building, fires on several floors, wasn't hit by a plane, concrete and steel, at 5:30 in the afternoon implodes. Why? How? You don't get any answers. White House won't give it to you. The 9/11 Commission won't even address it. The 9/11 Commission. Let's talk about that thing. First off, Bush, stymied, and Cheney, they didn't want the 9/11 Commission. They finally formulated the 9/11 Commission. They put it on a short leash. They had Kissinger they wanted first as the unbiased leader of it. Keene finally said something, which I'm sure he's gotten slapped for saying it, that 9/11 was preventable. See, what happens is when you get a sinking ship and it's starting to sink, people will bail out. There's been contacts. First off, most FBI, most CIA, most FAA, most NORAD people are honest, hardworking individuals. But there are a few bad eggs in there, and we're going to find them, and we're going to get them, because 9/11, thank you.